But we really want to create a space where women can get together and talk about their finances. And, you know, some people have said, well, why are you trying to exclude men? Are you being reverse sexist? And, you know, we did get one comment about that. And I said, no, we're not trying to be reverse sexist. But the thing is we already do live in a male-dominated culture. And there are numerous studies that have shown that when men and women are in rooms together, that men take up more of the space, they tend to talk more. And conversely, you know, when women are talking, they get interrupted more frequently as well. And I just think there's a different approach that men and women might need also. And so we just want to create that community, that feeling of, I'm meeting my new best friends. I'm meeting other women that are like-minded to me. I'm, you know, going to learn the financial skills from this retreat that are going to set me forward. So I'm going to make more money. I'm going to learn how to negotiate my salary. I'm going to learn actually how to invest because I don't know what any of that stuff means. I mean, our target audience is really, you know, people who know they want to get help. They know they're ready, but they're not sure how.
Welcome to Girl Gone Frugal Again, an audio production of MichelleIsMoneyHungry.com, a website for single women who are trying to get their money right. Today, we're speaking with my friend Melanie Lockhart, co-founder of the Lola Retreat. We talk money, life after debt, the Lola Retreat, and more. I really enjoyed this conversation, and I hope that you do too. If you enjoyed the show, please do make sure to subscribe. If you have questions or ideas for episodes, please do email me at michelleismoneyhungry@gmail.com. As always, enjoy. I'm your host, Michelle Jackson, and today I'm really, really excited to talk to my dear friend, Melanie Lockhart from Dear Debt. She is phenomenal. She's made so many changes since I first met her professionally, personally, financially. Her story is really a testament to you put one foot in front of the other and you keep going. And then when you get tired, you get knocked down, you get back up. And today, this interview will actually end up on two different shows that I produce. One is Girl Gone Frugal Again, as I introduced it, as well as Done, which is the podcast that I do focused towards online entrepreneurs and people who are looking to work digitally and create their own income outside of traditional jobs, the traditional J-O-B. So Melanie, please do introduce yourself.
Thanks so much for having me. It's always a pleasure to be back chatting with Michelle. We've gone way back. It seems like lifetimes ago when we were blogging babies. A little bit about me. My name is Melanie Lockhart. I'm an event planner and a freelance writer and also blogger. So I started Dear Debt, my blog about getting out of debt, in January 2013. And it was really a way for myself to stay accountable in the debt payoff process. In total, I paid off $81,000 in debt. Woo! And, you know, for the first 5 years, I just paid the minimum, wasn't really into debt paying off process, was in denial. And then really after I graduated from NYU and had a lot more debt was when I kind of had that fire under my butt. And I thought, oh man, I really have to get out of debt. And within 4.5 years, I paid off $68,000 of debt. And a large part of that would not be possible without my blog, without the new career that I have, and without all the connections I've had, like meeting Michelle.
I want to talk a little bit more about your financial story, and then we'll go into just a lot of the opportunities that you tapped into as a result of going into blogging and freelance writing. So you glossed over the fact you paid off a lot of debt, but it wasn't easy.
No, it definitely wasn't easy. I was trying to give you the short elevator pitch, but no, definitely it's a lot of heartbreak, a lot of depression, you know, a period of me being on food stamps, at least 2 years of me making $10 to $12 an hour, and then, you know, finally finding a nonprofit job, making $30,000, and then side hustling with blogging, and then essentially doubling my income that first year, and then just earning more since then. So yeah, it's been quite a financial transition from 2012, 2013 to now. You know, I think my 2012 tax return said I made like $15,000. I think 2013 was maybe 20,000, you know, so I was really not having a lot of money at that time, and I was forced to side hustle, and I was forced to scrimp, and, you know, luckily I was able to get by because I was living in Portland, Oregon, where my cost of living was very affordable, but yeah, things have changed so much.
So I want to kind of move forward and just talk about what your, like, when you were doing all this side hustling and you started freelance writing and stuff, and how you crafted together this new career, basically utilizing the skills that you already had.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that's so important. So, you know, I have a master's degree, even though it's in performance studies, a lot of it was writing. The nonprofit job that I eventually quit to be full-time, it was an events and communications coordinator position. So literally I am doing all of the skills that I already have, but for myself. And so to get started with these side hustles and just leverage the skills that I already had, it was all about networking and meeting people in the community. I would email all of my blogger friends who are freelance writing and ask for their advice, you know, not in a pestery, I'm going to ask you 20 questions sort of way, but like, hey, if you have any tips, just let me know, you know, very casual, you know, if they wanted to help, great. If they didn't have time, I totally understand, because I know now that I'm on the other side of the spectrum, how precious it is, you know, to have your time, and you don't want to just invade someone's inbox. But I think it is important to sort of reach out to people and network and ask for their advice. Really created this blogger community that kind of showed me what was possible. I was doing all these side hustles, like being a brand ambassador, being a mother's helper, working overnight raves, selling water bottles. I did a lot of weird stuff. Like,
That's the rave music.
I did a lot of weird stuff, and you know, once I found out that people could make money freelance writing from home, I thought, wow, really? People can write from home. They can do social media from home. They can edit from home. I just learned about all these things that were not even on my radar. And I thought, you know what? I would love to do things from home instead of just always going around town and getting on the bus. I didn't have a car at the time. I still don't have a car, by the way.
Hey, I'm not judging you, because I learned to drive as an adult, so clearly I did not have a car.
Yeah, it saves you a lot of money if you can not live without a car. But yeah, you know, just knowing that those side hustles were out there just showed me a completely different way of living, and it gave me a new way to approach. And I think what really started it all was the networking, the community, the education, and then just being unabashed about pitching and asking.
What would you say to the person who's like, I'm really scared to ask. I'm scared to put myself out there. I'm scared that I'm going to be rejected. So could you kind of walk through that mental space and how you like pushed through that? Because I think any person, whether they're freelance writing, they're doing contract work, computer techie stuff, or whatever they're doing, where they're putting themselves out there, there's a level of, I might get rejected. So how did you combat that feeling? And what would you say to someone who's either new to this or who's into it, but isn't having the results that they would like because of some fear?
Definitely. Well, first I would like to share this amazing saying that I just found out about this week that just completely blew my mind, but a closed mouth does not get fed.
Damn.
And I'll just say it again. A closed mouth does not get fed. And I think that's such a powerful metaphor for speaking up for yourself, for asking for what you want, for realizing that if you don't say something, then you're not going to get fed, you're not going to get paid, you're not going to get what you need. So you realize you have to say something because you have to make money, you have to support yourself, you have to do these things. So you have to realize that this is an obstacle that you are going to overcome. And the only way to overcome that is through continually doing it. And the first couple of times are so scary. So scary. You're like, I've never done this before. They're not going to like me. They're going to laugh at me. They're going to think all these things. But the thing is people are generally nice, number one. So all of those things that you think are going to happen probably won't. Number two, doing it via email especially, it's so low risk. I mean, this isn't a one-on-one meeting where, you know, you're pitching yourself in person. This is an email for the most part. You know, you can carefully craft that and see what happens. And if you're not getting a response still, I would say change your approach and maybe your communication. Maybe the email is too long. Maybe the pitch is too long. Maybe you're not sending the right information. You know, maybe you say, oh, I can freelance write for you, but you're not sending your portfolio. You're not sending your ideas. I would definitely say try to look at the information that the client really needs. You know, if I'm on a website and I'm like, what can I bring to this website? I have to find how I will fit in and why they would want to hire me. Because if I just write like everybody else, then they could just continually to hire those people. They don't need to hire me. But if I can bring this specific perspective, if I can be the student loan expert, if I can bring a more fun, casual voice, you know, if I can bring a millennial voice or whatever that may be, I need to know my perspective and what I bring to the table. And I think that's really important for people who are looking to do side hustles online, is you really have to understand how you are different and market that, because it is a very saturated industry all around. And so you have to uniquely own you.
How do you market yourself in general? Like, how do you market your event? Because you don't just freelance, right? That's like one of the many things that you do. So how do you get in front of the people that could work with you? And listeners, notice that I said work with versus hire, because she is on the same footing. Any person who's in a business like this, we're working with clients and we're collaborating together. And I think the language behind that's very important, because I'm not their employee.
Yes.
So
no, they,
and sometimes with working with contractors or, you know, you're pitching clients for whatever type of work you're trying to do with them, sometimes the client might be confused by that. And, so I'm wondering, What types of things do you do to market yourself so that you're getting out there constantly and people are seeing that, hey, maybe we would like to work with Melanie?
Yeah, I think there's so many different ways to market. And I think the biggest key to my success has been relationship building. I, you know, don't have a great, you know, social presence. I mean, I definitely update my social media regularly enough for a blogger and a person, but, you know, I'm not like a crazed Pinterest rock star or, you know, an Instagram babe who just posts all day. You know, that's
hashtag that's not me. Instagram life.
Yeah. Hashtag blessed. No, that's not really me. But what I do think I offer is a genuine, friendship and genuine care to other people. And so I've built a lot of friendships in the community. So I know Michelle and I met, I think, 4 years ago?
It's been a while. Yeah.
She was the first person to write a Dear Debt Letter on my blog, which was amazing. And, you know, because of the Dear Debt Letter project, I've met a lot of people. And so I think if you can create a platform like a blog, like having a project like Dear Debt, you're going to meet a lot of people and really care for those relationships. And so, you know, I definitely stay in touch with people via Skype, Google Hangouts. I make sure to check up on my friends. I make sure that I'm caring about what other people are doing and really trying to extend myself. And then also, I think a big part of marketing that people don't necessarily get is that it's important sometimes just to be transparent about what you offer and what you do, because I realize that not many people know about my event planning business. And that's because I don't have a formal website for one portion of it. This is sort of just happened organically through pitches and through sort of side projects. But, you know, it's really important because I tell people, oh, how about this as an idea? This is what we've done so far. And so really just letting people know what you do and what you can offer. I think that's super important.
So one of the reasons why I reached out to you, we've done interviews before, but a lot of things have changed. Like time moves on and things change. And one of the things that I'm, one of your projects that I'm so excited about, I can't wait, is the Lola, is it Lola Women's Retreat? How would you, what's the name?
The name is Lola Retreat.
Okay, Lola Retreat. I'm super excited. I've never been to Oregon or to Portland, so I am like so stoked. And actually, I'm going to hop over to Seattle after the end of the conference. So,
oh, fun.
I'm really excited about that. But I want to talk about the Lola Retreat, your mission, why you decided to do something like this, because I've done, I did 10 years of event planning. Like, it's really funny as I interview people, it's hilarious to me how much we have in common in terms of our backgrounds. So I've done event planning, and putting together a retreat like this is a lot of work.
So yes, it is.
Why do this to yourself? Who are you trying to serve? And like, how did this come about? Like, I have so many questions. All the questions. Answer all the questions.
Yeah. So, you know, I've been doing women and money events in the past, and, you know, I met Emma at FinCon this past year, and we just sort of met and really hit it off. And there was a bunch of women talking about how can we really create a movement for women and to create a space for women to talk about their money. And, you know, bunch of different things happen, and we just sort of realized that we wanted to create our own retreat, Lola Retreat, where it's just women. It would be catered towards millennial women specifically. Of course, anyone is welcome to come. We're, you know, age friendly. We want everyone there. But we really want to create a space where women can get together and talk about their finances. And, you know, some people have said, well, why are you trying to exclude men? Are you being reverse sexist? And, you know, we did get one comment about that. And I said, no, we're not trying to be reverse sexist. But the thing is we already do live in a male-dominated culture. And there are numerous studies that have shown that when men and women are in rooms together, that men take up more of the space. They tend to talk more. And conversely, you know, when women are talking, they get interrupted more frequently as well. And I just think there's a different approach that men and women might need also. And so we just want to create that community, that feeling of, I'm meeting my new best friends. I'm meeting other women that are like-minded to me. I'm, you know, going to learn the financial skills from this retreat that are going to set me forward. So I'm going to make more money. I'm going to learn how to negotiate my salary. I'm going to learn actually how to invest, because I don't know what any of that stuff means. I mean, our target audience is really, you know, people who know they want to get help. They know they're ready, but they're not sure how. You know, we really want to bring that how to the financial equation, and also create community, because I think the biggest part about changing your financial life is having that accountability and community. I mean, that is what made Dear Debt so successful. That's what made me pay off my debt early, was having that community. And so we're hoping to bring it, you know, even bigger and better with Lola.
I'm thinking, and probably other people are wondering, what about other conferences, like why couldn't you do a panel versus a retreat? I'm down. I think it's awesome. And I actually really understand the need for a separate space. But for that person who's still like not understanding, why not collaborate with another conference to do something like this, to bring a conversation like this to that space? What would you say to that?
That's a really good question. I think it could go either way depending on, you know, who's planning it. It was just something that I realized that this was something that we wanted to do on our own and build something for ourselves. You know, Emma and I are both freelancers. We're both solopreneurs. As of right now, I'm making this awkward transition, you know, sort of out of freelance writing all the time, sort of breaking it down into more event planning, public speaking, and that sort of thing. And I realized Lola was really the next step for that. Lola is really sort of me making that transition from I'm just a freelance writer to no, I'm a solopreneur with a business with diverse projects. And so this is sort of our passion project, our love project. And I think it can definitely be done as a panel, but with everything that we want to cover, I mean, our thing is not going to be a panel of talking heads where people just espouse their opinion, blah, blah, blah. This is going to be workshops. It's going to be hands-on. We're going to have instructors that are actually telling you how to budget. We're going to break down those crazy investing codes so you know what the heck they are. I'm definitely sitting on that one. You know, we have a couples counselor who's going to help us tackle love and money issues because money is still one of the leading causes of divorce. And, you know, she has told us already that, you know, whenever she has couples on her couch, you know, talking about money issues, more often than not, it comes down to power dynamics. And so how can we reframe this conversation and how can we make sure that we rock our relationships and our money in a safe, healthy way? And then we also have a financial therapist who is going to help us really get through some of the similar and kind of common money mindset issues that a lot of people have and give us some tactical advice on behavioral changes that we can make.
I love this. And one, you know, you were talking about the behavioral therapist. I wanted to also touch on money and depression. Or maybe how money can affect mood. That might be a better way to put it. Where sometimes I notice, like, when I'm flush with cash, I feel a euphoric kind of experience. It's like euphoria. Yeah. And then
I feel good.
I'm like skipping through the fields, skipping through the daisies. Life is awesome.
I'm so rich.
Yes, you know, I'm like throwing, you know, dollars here and there. And then when money drops, like the cash level drops, I'm just like, I've done something wrong. I'm horrible. This is, you know, like there's a lot of self-flagellation, if you will, like I'm beating myself up. And so I think you guys will, but could you speak to your experience about money and mood and, will you guys be talking about that at the retreat as well?
Yeah, we're definitely having that at the retreat with Amanda Clayman, the financial therapist, as well as Sarah Patti, the couples counselor. That's a big passion of ours because we know that at the core of money management really is your mindset. And I know it sounds so counterintuitive for people that are just getting started on this journey. I mean, because in reality, personal finance is as simple as spend less, earn more. It's in reality, it should be that easy, but in reality, it's not. And much of it is because of our mindset. There are things, of course, outside of our control, like the economy. And these are all things that we need to consider. But I think our mindset plays a huge role in our money and it affects our emotions. I know when I was paying off debt, I was in a deep depression 5 years ago because I couldn't find a job. I was stuck in debt. And I felt like, wow, I took off all these student loans from this fancy private school. I have nothing to show for it. I felt so much guilt. I felt so much shame. I felt anxiety and depression on how I was going to ever pay this off. And, you know, now that I have paid off my debt, I still kind of have this lingering anxiety about money. Like,
it's like
I
never PTSD.
It's like PTSD. Like, I never want to go back to that place again. And, you know, I've been hit with a lot of different expenses this year and I'm just like, oh, okay, let's not panic. Let's just remember that I'm still out of debt. And if that means I can't save as much this month, that is fine. But I think there's a inextricable link between money and mood. And it's so important to really focus on your money mindset so that we can have a healthy relationship with money and sort of get rid of those bad feelings and sort of bad things we've been told about money, these horrible stories about money that aren't really serving us. I know I got rid of the story that artists can't make money. I got rid of the story that, you know, being rich means you're greedy. I mean, these are all things that I grew up with that I sort of just thought. And then I realized if I ever did want to make money, then I would have to come to terms with all of those things.
You know, it's so funny. I'm in the process of rebranding the Shop My Closet project. And I've basically let that website kind of taper off. I haven't wanted to add new content to it for a while because people really didn't understand the concept. Like once a year, someone would be like, oh yeah, I get it. Like use what you have. Once a year, someone would totally get it. And then like for the other 364 days of the year, no one understood what the hell I was talking about. And I made it worse because I was like writing random stuff and I'd be meta in one post and then talking about budgeting in another. It was very confusing. And anyway, my point is I'm currently rebranding it, speaking to your point about money myths and money mindsets. And the new URL, which I own, so I can actually say it, and I think I'm getting it changed in the next couple of days. I just need to connect with Grayson. Michelle is money hungry. And yeah, the reason why I did that, though, is because of the same stuff that you were taught, that money is bad, that wanting lots of cash and earning more is bad, that's greedy. And I'm like, hell no, it's not greedy. I need to pay off stuff. I need to earn more so I can help people. I need to earn more so I can take care of myself. I need to earn more because I'm a Gen Xer and I might need to have help having babies. You know, yeah. Like it, you know, I would like to get married.
All of those are valid. Yeah.
and it's pretty valid. And I realized that I had this money story that, you know, earning more is bad because then you're greedy. Debt. I didn't even have a money story about debt other than, of course, you're going to always have debt. There's no other possibility of having a life without debt. And that one was probably the one I didn't realize I struggled with, as much as I did until I stopped using debt because I really couldn't, and have been on a cash budget. And it's been such a freeing experience. And then the other thing is just, you know, the whole comparison game where you sit there and you compare yourself to others, but you always fail. So I've really worked on not comparing myself to someone else because really I always set myself up for failure. So when you're crafting your business together and having this forward vision for yourself, what do you do to make sure that you're in your vision and you're not sitting there looking at like someone else who's making like half a mil? And like, how do you keep it healthy for you so that you can attain the goals that you've set for yourself and also keep your mindset healthy?
Yeah, I think that's such a good question because in the personal finance world, so many people are transparent about their income, which is great. And there are a lot of people that are just making mad money. And, you know, it is kind of, you know, it's inspiring, but on one hand, you're like, damn, what am I doing wrong?
Especially like, if you knew them when they started at zero.
I know.
And you're just like, oh.
You're like, man, I'm doing things wrong. And then what I always have to remember when I'm starting to like go down that rabbit hole, I was like, you know what? I don't have the same business model as them. Like they are just this one thing. I happen to be this, that, and the other thing. And you know, I'm choosing to sort of fracture off my business. And a big portion of that is events. And events take a lot longer. They're a lot more investment of your time until you can make money. You know, at this point, we'll see if we can even make money on Lola, obviously break even and support the mission for the first year. But, you know, really just trying to focus on my goals and my business and just realize that it's not apples to apples. Because whenever I look at these people that I might be jealous of or think, man, I should be making that kind of money, I'm like, but they're focusing on this one thing or they're in a completely different business model than me. And I'm really working on 2 to 3 separate projects right now that I all love. And that's me and my business model. And that's fine. And, you know, I do want to find ways to earn more and to make myself happy. But then I also think it's important to acknowledge how far you've come. Like, you know, this last month, sadly, was one of my lower income months for quite a long time. And I was feeling pretty bummed about it. And I thought, you know what? I was able to pay the rent, was able to eat, still able to save. And this is still a heck of a lot more money than I was making just a few years ago. So, you know what? There's always next month and there's always tomorrow. And, you know, that's just sort of the nature of being self-employed, that sometimes it's feast, sometimes it's famine, sometimes it's up, sometimes it's down, and that's okay.
I wanted to know, could you share a little bit, like a day in the life, like a before and after, actually? So talk about what it was like working, you know, one day at the nonprofit versus what you do now.
Yeah. So I would say when I was working at the nonprofit, I did wake up really early, like 6 a.m. to do my freelance writing side hustle. And then I'd be out the door by 8. I biked to work, got there by 9. From 9 a.m. to 5:30, I would answer a lot of emails. I would send newsletters. I would be planning our events at work. Was in a lot of meetings. Oh gosh, I don't miss those meetings. And then I would get off work at 5:30. I would bike home, be back by 6:30, probably eat dinner. And then from 7 to midnight, I'd probably be side hustling again, because it was during that time I was really side hustling a ton so that I could quit that job. And then now I'm almost on my 3-year quitiversary, which I'm really excited about. And the days are different. My favorite part of the day is that I sleep in. it's no joke. I love sleeping in. I think it's really important that if you are self-employed, to take advantage of things that you couldn't do otherwise. Because I feel like it's really easy to get trapped into this, I'm just creating another job for myself, and then just not really taking advantage of being self-employed. So I'm actively, you know, sleeping in every day until whenever I want, unless I have a meeting. I'll take the afternoon off to go see my grandpa or maybe see a movie. But, you know, I really start the day tackling my email list, doing some social media. The bulk of the day is then on content creation, sort of event strategy. What are our next steps? You know, planning an event is so overwhelming. But once we worked backwards, we're like, let's just list out every single thing that we have to do, and then create mini bullet points of subtasks of everything we need to do. And it was really tedious, but you know, then we're like, oh, we could do this. Like once you saw it on paper and you were like, oh, all of these individual tasks we can do, you know, so sort of working on what are the next steps. You know, we're working on sponsorships, we're working on local outreach, we're working on getting more scholarships for our attendees. So every day is a little bit different, and that's what I love about my current job and, you know, what I'm currently doing, is that I like that every day is different. I'm not a person that necessarily thrives by routine.
For someone who is, and we're kind of wrapping up, but for someone who is interested in working for themselves, but they're nervous about the money and the ebb and flow and just all of the unknown, what would you say to them about your experience and what you've observed in other people's experiences?
I would say definitely know your bare bones budget. So what you actually need to bring in each month to eat, to pay your rent. I think that is the most important number you need at first, because obviously you want to start a business to actually pay your bills and survive. And then secondly, come up with a more realistic budget, you know, your rent, your food, you know, maybe going out here and there. So definitely know your numbers and then really track what you're making every single month, you know, and also track where people are coming from. I think if you're a business owner, it's super important. How did you find out about my service? Where did you find out about me? So much work is given out through word of mouth. It's not even funny. Like a good portion of my business has all been word of mouth, or people want to talk to me about, you know, a sponsored blog post, and then I pitch them on an event instead. You know, I think also thinking about new ways to get new clients too, right? But in regards to the money, in that first year, I think it's super important to bootstrap and to really focus on building and sustaining. I see a lot of new business owners spend a lot of money unnecessarily trying to think they need all the latest gadgets and products and X, Y, and Z just to, you know, start. And it's like, no, you get those things as you grow, but you don't necessarily need a lot to start, I don't think.
And I think my final question, which is something that I've struggled with until recently, like I've struggled with this issue, and then I'll talk about it after you're done, but how do you build consistency into your business? And what were some of the things that you did so that you could meet your metrics and do what you needed to do to grow your business? Because one of the things I noticed about me after, so I quit and then I went to Australia because I was going to have a nervous breakdown and I took a break. And then,
good for you.
so that was good. And then I came back and I had a vague plan of what I needed to do. I knew my bare bones numbers and all that. And then I hustled like a crazy, and I actually made a lot of money when I first came back because I was just on it. And then what happened over time was I discovered that I'm a little bit hippie fantastic in all the wrong ways when you're trying to run a business. So the weather would be nice. As my listeners know, I live in Colorado. I'd be like, oh, it's great time to go hiking. And, you know, then I'd like ride my bike. And it wasn't because I wasn't a hard worker, because I'd worked so hard before. Mm-hmm. Like, I can work. Like, I could work like a machine. But for some reason, I really struggled for a while. And we're talking 2.5 years, like 2.5 years. It's taken a while until I hit what I feel is now consistency. And mm-hmm. and I think that that's a big part of where people have a hard time with business, is just figuring out the way that they need to focus so that they can get outcomes that create money. So what did you do? Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So first of all, in regards to consistency, I think it is important to find consistency, but I also think it's important that as entrepreneurs and business owners, there's no such thing as consistency and that it can go away at any time. And what I mean by that is I had a great client, one of my favorite clients ever, for the past 2.5 years. And, you know, they unfortunately, you know, canceled their contract with me because they were taking everything in-house. And that's kind of a normal problem. People stop working with freelancers, you know, so they can go with people, you know, that are full-time and can commit to the company. And, you know, that was definitely a way for me to make consistent income, because I had a client that needed deliverables each month, that what I produced for them would pay my rent each and every month, right?
Right.
And, you know, that contract has now ended, and I realized what a safety net that was, you know, and now I'm kind of like, oh, I need more clients like that. And, you know, I've found a few, but it's also making me realize that I need to diversify even more mm-hmm. in regards to products, in regards to webinars, because I really want to create my own sort of consistent income. You know, as a freelancer, a lot of the time your consistency is based on other people's budgets, their editors, if they're going in-house or with freelancers, you know, based on their budget. So I think it's important to know where you can get that consistent income, either through retainer contracts or by creating your own products and services.
Actually, I kind of mean something a little bit different though, in addition in addition to the money though, I mean, just motivating yourself mm-hmm. to be consistent, like to consistently pitch. So like I said, I had this freedom, and I think that maybe that's where I should have started with. I had all this freedom that when you work a 9-to-5, like, you don't have freedom like that. You get up, mm-hmm. you get on the bus, you hustle to get there, you get yelled at all day long, you go to meetings, you have outcomes that are specific to where you're working. And so I think that that's the piece that people kind of get seduced by, is the freedom. So mm-hmm. actually I probably should have asked it two ways, which is the income, which mm-hmm. you answered, but the freedom, how do you manage that? Cause you're sleeping in, you're chilling, mm-hmm. you're waking up all refreshed and having a cup of coffee or tea. And, you know, you're in LA living the LA life. I know how that is. So how do you keep yourself motivated so that you're making money and creating business and not distracted by the freedom.
Mm-hmm. I think it's important every day to have at least 2 to 3 really important goals that you want to set. And then, you know, once you do that, then go enjoy yourself a little bit. I think it's important to take advantage of that freedom because we work more hours than anyone. I can tell you that. That's for sure. So I do want, you know, people that are self-employed to take advantage of the time off. But in regards to staying consistent, I think it's about knowing what work you need to put in that day to meet your outcomes. Maybe we need to create a visual chart. Maybe you need post-it notes. Maybe you need reminders on your phone. You can also work backward and say, you know, I want to make $500 a day. What am I going to do to get there? And, you know, try to do that. You know, and also just check in weekly. I think it's important to have a bigger vision of what your business is, because when you're just stuck in the day in and day out of producing, you know, content creating, sometimes it's really difficult to be like, wait, why am I doing this again? I feel like I'm just working and I'm not actually going outside and enjoying all this stuff. But you have to have a bigger vision of what you want and what your ultimate goal is. And to that end, really asking, is everything I'm doing right now helping me get to that goal? Because if it's not, then I should just not do this and go out and play in the sun.
So thank you so much for hanging out with me today. I really love this interview. There's a lot for people to go away with, both the personal finance, the business. Like, this has just been a wonderfully cohesive and seamlessly awesome interview about all things entrepreneurship and personal finance.
Thank you.
Could you please again share information about Lola Retreat, how they can find you, how they can purchase your book, Dear Debt, which we didn't mention, and just all the things, Melanie.
Thank you, Michelle. Well, first of all, thank you so much for having me. It's always a pleasure chatting with you and happy to be back anytime. Yay. People can find me on deardebt.com. They can buy the book, Dear Debt, a blog about breaking up with debt, on Amazon. Or you can purchase it directly from me if you want it signed. Just send me an email and I'll mail one to you. And then you can go to lolaretreat.com and check out our speaker lineup. Check out our schedule. It's going to be this summer in Portland, August 18th to the 20th. You can hang out with Michelle.
Whoop, whoop. We're going to go to Portland, and I will be dropping my affiliate code that you've given me that I have to I don't know where my Gmail it is, but it's in there.
Yes.
And I will share that in the show notes as well. So please do attend Lola Retreat. It's in a wonderful space. I mean, everything looks so beautiful. I'm actually staying, I think, at the not at the host venue, but one down the street, which is so beautiful.
Are you staying at the Crystal?
No, it's not that. What is it called? It's so cute. It's like a hostel, but not a hostel.
Okay.
I don't know. It's on your list, but anyway.
Okay, cool.
It's gorgeous. I'll throw a link in the notes for that one too, but I can't remember the name of it. I booked 5 trips at the same time, so I don't know what's happening for any of them. I just know they're I just know they're booked. But please, everyone, support Melanie on everything that she's doing. If you're a single woman, and actually Girl Gone Frugal again is very specifically focused on single women and their money, this is the place for you, even though it will also deal with women who are married, that kind of thing. But I want you to go. So thank you so much, Melanie.
Yes, thanks for having me.